You're with us for the morning show as we bring you candidate conversations leading up to Tuesday's partisan primary election. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Matthew Boer is a Democratic candidate running for Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. He seeks to challenge Republican U.S. Representative Glenn Grothman, who was first elected to the office in 2014. Boer will face Democrats Michael Beardsley and Jessica King in the August primary. Are you a voter? What questions do you have for candidate Matthew Boer? We're at 800-642-1234. Matthew Boer is a business development director in Manitowoc. Matt, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. It's a beautiful day in Wisconsin. How are you today, Kate?
I'm doing well. So can you start out by telling us why you are the best Democratic candidate to face Republican Representative Glenn Grothman in November?
Sure. Absolutely. Well, I think we'll start in the beginning. My parents came from diverse backgrounds. My mother was a special education teacher in the public schools. My father was an entrepreneur. And when I say an entrepreneur, I mean he was like a one-man band. When I ever came home from school and there would be a bunch of drop cloths on the floor of like the TV room, I knew that he'd gotten an order and we could work through it. And I think it's the sort of values you learn through that sort of dichotomy, as well as hard work at a young age, that really kind of sets you up for a career in public service, or at least a stint in it, which is what I'm really going for.
If you were to be elected to Congress, what are the three things that you want to accomplish?
Sure. So in my day job, I'm the director of business development for a large metal fabrication shop in Manitowoc. And a large part of our business, a big footprint we have, is actually in the renewable energy sector. And I've worked in renewable energy, specifically wind energy, for about 15 years. Certainly, renewable energy is like the first plank in my platform. I think that would be an awesome thing to have more of in Wisconsin for a few reasons. It doesn't pollute the air. It doesn't use any water. It promotes a lot of onshore manufacturing to keep our metal fab shops and concrete plants and all that sort of thing busy. And it creates jobs. I mean, for example, if you're driving around in Fond du Lac County or Dodge County and you see a bunch of the giant wind turbines that make electricity, you can figure that for about every 8 to 10 of those, that's one full-time job that's not going anywhere for at least 20 years. That's fantastic. Of late, we've seen some development in solar energy in Wisconsin, specifically in northern Manitowoc County. I think that's awesome. Again, you're creating jobs that can't really go away. So the second issue that I'd like to talk about, and definitely am a big proponent of, is more available high-speed internet in rural Wisconsin and in rural parts of our country. I think the experience of teaching students at home has really shined a bright light on the importance of having like a reliable, decent internet connection for a lot of people. The internet's not about entertainment anymore. It's about educating yourself, whether that means taking a class or, you know, trying to figure out what sort of car to buy when your current car, poops out.
What more could be done in your part of the state to increase and expand high-speed internet? Wisconsin provides millions in grants each year.
Sure. You're right about that. However, there's still plenty of parts, even in the 6th district, that people don't have internet that's either reliable or that's even near affordable. So, there's still plenty of individuals that are stuck on dial-up in certain parts of the district, and that's just unacceptable. And I think COVID has shined a bright light on that. The third thing that I think could really benefit individuals in the rural parts of Wisconsin would be decriminalized marijuana at the federal level. I think that's an important thing to tackle. I think that would, in speaking with a lot of law enforcement officers and attorneys, I think that would really release a large burden on the criminal justice system as well. And frankly, we could use the tax revenue if states would choose to, regulate it and sell it. And that should be their choice, not the federal government's.
Would you see Wisconsin allowing both medical and or recreational use?
I would certainly support that.
We're talking with Matt Boer, a Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District, as we continue our candidate conversations ahead of the August partisan primary. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Jay joining us from Madison. Hi, Jay. What's your question?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. So the Republicans have a cohesive theory of how the economy works. It's called supply-side economics, which is that if you give tax breaks to the rich, it'll create jobs for the poor. Now, it's completely ridiculous. There's no empirical evidence that that has ever worked. But in the lack of a – there has been no real cohesive response from Democrats for how the economy works and how we build wealth. So one of the things I think that Democrats really need to develop is a cohesive, understandable theory about how the economy works. And so my question for the candidate is, what is his theory of how the economy works? And how-
Oh, and I think we just lost Jay there. And, you know, Jay, I think, was driving at wealth building, Matt, and that the Democrats are, you know, not very clear on this particular thing, and it's supply side economics. Can you elaborate? And I think we're losing Matt Boer as well, as we have had some technical difficulties this morning. And thank you so much for sticking with us this morning. We have been talking with Matt Boer, who is a Democratic candidate running for Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. He seeks to challenge Republican U.S. Representative Glenn Grothman, who was first elected to the office in 2014. Boer on Tuesday will face Democrats Michael Beardsley and Jessica King, who we spoke with yesterday in the August primary. You can join in with your questions for Matt Boer and his stances and on stances on issues like climate change, on high-speed internet, on the regulation of marijuana. We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. As we've been heading into Tuesday's partisan primary, the Ideas Network is conducting interviews with candidates who are on the ballot for seats in Congress. They first are faced with the partisan primary ahead of November's general election. Today, we've been talking with Matthew Boer, who is seeking the 6th Congressional District seat, and taking these candidate conversations, you know, one at a time, learning about their opinions on various issues, everything from climate change to education to how the federal government is handling the coronavirus. Do you live in Oshkosh, Fond du Lac, Watoma, Portage, Beaver Dam, another community in the 6th? What do you think Congress should be doing? How do you think Congress should tackle big issues like the coronavirus, like unemployment, policing, climate change, immigration, or education? And what questions do you have about the 6th District and the issues that are most pressing there? Maybe you live in Manitowoc or Sheboygan, Port Washington, Mequon, or another community. What issues matter to you? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. As I said earlier here, we're having connection issues here as we talk with Matt Boer, who will face Democrats Michael Beardsley and Jessica King in the August partisan primary. That is Tuesday. And as we try to get the connection back, you can think about your priorities as a voter in the 6th District. The line is 800-642-1234. We'll look to establish reconnection here in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Candidate Conversations here in the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Matthew Boer, a Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. He aims to challenge Republican U.S. Representative Glenn Grothman. First takes on Michael Beardsley and Jessica King in Tuesday's primary. And I am sorry that we're having some technical difficulties. Matt, can you hear us?
I can hear you loud and clear. Can you hear me?
Okay, good. All right. Well, I want to go back to if you have any insights. The caller had dropped but had talked about the Democratic Party having difficulties in how to build wealth in our country. And if you have insights there.
Sure. So prior to as much of the question that I heard, it sounded like the caller was building to a really good question. I heard basically that something like the GOP side of things has a supply, it believes in supply side economics, and like what was the Democrats' response to that? But if the question is really like how do we build wealth, I mean, I think the best way to go about this is to incentivize education and having a well-trained workforce. In speaking with hundreds of business owners over the last year or so that I've been at this, biggest thing I keep hearing is we're having individuals approach our company to work, and basically we don't, although we might have a job to give them, they don't have the skills required to get that job, and we don't have the time or energy to be able to train them. Furthermore, they're concerned that individuals that if they do take the time to train those folks, basically they might jump ship and go somewhere for a different job. So I think really what it comes down to is, you know, making sure that individuals entering the workforce have the education and the skills needed to do any sort of range of jobs. And I think as a former technical college teacher, I feel like there is a great opportunity for the tech college system to really step in, you know, even more so than they have been, which has been wonderful, to prepare individuals to work. And that will help companies make money, which allows them to pay their employees more, which allows individuals to buy houses. It just kind of goes from there.
Looking at the pandemic, if you were a member of Congress, what kind of economic relief measures would you support?
That's a good question. I mean, you talk about an issue that has just really stole the microphone the last, you know, over the last 6 months here. I'd say that I support some of the COVID stimulus. That's for certain. However, basically we've taken on an awful lot of debt in order to do that. Personally, I would have liked to see more loan forgiveness, meaning if an individual has a mortgage that they're having difficulty paying, instead of giving them a loan for the money so they can make a few payments, I would have liked to see basically almost a federal government magic wand where they could say, okay, we're going to, you know, forgive your payments on your mortgage for the next X number of months, or we're going to put it on the back end. Basically, that gives individuals the ability to, you know, skate through until things hopefully improve, as well as basically it also allows them to not take on more debt than they already have. I know a lot of folks that have taken on the PPP loans and things like that, and they're concerned about how they're even going to make those payments. I mean, the money in the short term is great, but really what I think would have gone a longer way would be debt relief and more direct payments to individuals themselves.
I just want to look more closely here, though. Should Congress extend the $600 weekly unemployment benefits that expired last month?
I would favor extending some form of that $600. I think the $600 might be a bit much, but certainly individuals, especially anyone that's connected to hospitality, tourism, that's, you know, never really took off this year, or if it did, it kind of half took off. And then we all know what happens in Wisconsin, you know, around mid-September, all the tourism dollars, at least many of them, kind of dry up. Basically, we need to make sure that those individuals are taken care of through this truly weird time.
Talking with Matt Boer, a Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District, as we continue our candidate conversations ahead of Tuesday's partisan primary. Let's bring in Dave joining us from Fort Atkinson. Hi, Dave.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Glad we can hear you. What's your question?
Yeah, so, all right. I have really two topics. I'm a registered Democrat. I actually ran against Jim Sensenbrenner in 2012. So I certainly have a you know, my thoughts on how Democrats think about the economy in terms of the opposite of trickle down. I can talk about that, or I can ask a question about voter suppression or disenfranchisement, or both.
Dave, you know, what do you see there about voter suppression, and what would you like to see done on Capitol Hill?
Sure. Well, the question is really for Matt. Like, what are you going to do about it? And specifically with Glenn Grossman, he was caught on tape literally saying that Republicans have a better chance now that voter ID has been put in place. I was shocked because everyone knew that that's why the Republicans were doing it, but no one thought anyone would be dumb enough to admit it on air, and he did. So the question to Matt is then, you know, what are you going to do about voter suppression?
All right. Matt Boer, how would you respond to Dave?
Sure. Dave, thanks for calling in today. That's a big question right now, and you're really describing something that we're all watching happening. I mean, anyone that was in Wisconsin in April that saw how that the election at that point, in the height of the Safer at Home Act, basically, or Safer at Home Order, basically was forced to either go to the polls or try to figure something out in order to vote, that was a scary situation. And, you know, that's you could certainly argue that that's a form of voter suppression. I definitely like the fact that we can vote by mail. And I think, especially in times like this, we should encourage people to do that sort of thing. I also favor the idea of making Election Day some sort of a national holiday. Whether we swap out one of the other holidays for that or not, that's a different issue. But I would certainly support any sort of a bill that would state that, you know, on Election Day, you can vote in a way that, you know, definitely would not affect your employment, and you can get the day off to celebrate our democracy. I think that's a great idea.
I want to circle back to climate, the first issue you brought up. Governor Evers set a goal of Wisconsin becoming carbon-free by 2050. Is that a reasonable, achievable goal?
That's a big goal. Let's not lie to ourselves. That would take a fundamental change in the way we do a number of things, specifically our power generation. Currently, Wisconsin's renewable portfolio standard is 10%. That's basically a combination of hydroelectric dams, solar power, and wind energy. And we're only at 10% right there. If you look at nuclear is about another, I believe, 16-18% on top of that. So instead, basically, you can assume that about the rest of the percentage of our energy mix is some sort of combustive process that, again, throws a lot of carbon dioxide into the air as well as other contaminants. So basically, to swap everything over to renewable energy in general would be that would be a monstrous goal. 2015 might be a little too aggressive, but, you know, you definitely want to set a goal out there that makes people reach for it. And I think the government's governor is totally right in setting such a high goal and such an aggressive goal, because that would definitely provoke action.
Another issue is water in Wisconsin. How could Congress help improve water quality for residents of the 6th District?
That's a good question. We certainly have our problems with water in the 6th District. I mean, towards the lake, due to the geology that we have, a lot of any sort of runoff or effluent from our dairy industry certainly can make its way into the groundwater really, really quickly. Once you get over towards the central part of the state, they have a lot of sandy soils. So that creates the same problem, but in a different way. The Clean Air and the Clean Water Act turned 50 years old this year. And it seems like in some ways, with respect to federal legislation, we might be going backwards. I think it's definitely those are the sort of things that we need to protect and even embolden as we move forward.
Looking at our criminal justice system, the 6th District has more than half of state prisons in the district. What needs to change, in your view, in Wisconsin's prison system?
I think, well, you're right. The 6th District is definitely the prison district. There's no question there. In terms of what needs to change, again, I favor legalizing marijuana. That would take a large burden off of the criminal justice system alone. It would free up a lot of bandwidth in there to keep hopefully nonviolent offenders out of jail. I mean, there's someone that's sitting in jail in Fond du Lac County for 6 months certainly isn't working. They're certainly not doing anything productive. That's for sure. In fact, quite the opposite is true. They're spending state money. We're spending state money to keep them there. So again, I think that would be one of the biggest, the lowest hanging fruits that we could grab there.
Few seconds left. How concerned do you remain about opioid abuse in the district?
Wow, that is real and it's here. And if you want to talk about something that just kind of rots the soul of a society, that's addictions to drugs like opioids, that'll do it. I think by this point in 2020, every single person that we know probably at least knows somebody, whether it's their brother, sister, a cousin, a friend, a guy they work with, that's fallen into opioid addiction. I'd say the drastic majority of those individuals weren't bad people or something like that. They didn't have some sort of a death wish or, they weren't into that sort of lifestyle, but they started innocently enough with maybe a sprained ankle or a bad back that they tweaked at work, something like that, to get prescribed some opioids, and then they're just on a bad path.
Just a few seconds left there. Thank you for joining us. Matt Boer is a Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. Coming up, we talk about changes at the Milwaukee Police Department. This is The Morning Show. You're with us for The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Milwaukee has a new police chief today. An oversight board unanimously voted last night to demote Chief Alfonso Morales after he failed to adequately respond to its directives. Morales will stay on the force as a captain. Assistant Chief Michael Brunson Sr. will lead the department. This comes after years of protests in the city over police actions, including the use of deadly force against residents, and most recently officers using tear gas to quell demonstrations over George Floyd's death. Here's Fire and Police Commission Chair Stephen DeVogas addressing the city yesterday.
2020 has been strange, but times are also changing, and change must come and will come to the city of Milwaukee.
How do you feel about the commission's move? What impact will this have on police and community relations? We're at 800-642-1234. Gina Barton is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Gina, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
All right, well, take us to last night. What happened at the meeting?
The meeting last night was the culmination of all sorts of crazy things. But in the end, the Fire and Police Commission voted to demote Chief Morales back to captain, which is the rank that he held before he became chief. And before the vote took place, many of the commissioners had some really harsh things to say about him in terms of accusing him of lying to them, saying that he hadn't worked with them, that when he was given a four-year term late last year, he made all these promises that he hadn't kept. So it was pretty contentious.
How did Morales respond?
Morales was not at the meeting. He was attending via video and didn't say anything to us or any of our reporters. We talked to his attorney later last night, who said, he's considering all his options. The attorney, Frank Gimbel, had told us earlier in the day that there's a possibility that Morales might sue because he thinks that the process to remove him was flawed and possibly illegal. But also, Morales has given his support to the new chief, Brunson, who actually had served as an assistant chief under Morales. So now suddenly the boss is the underling and vice versa.
Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett expressed his anger about the board's action, saying Morales should have been given a chance to respond to directives issued by the oversight board. Can you lay out what these directives were asking?
Yes. I had a really interesting conversation with Mayor Barrett before the meeting yesterday, and he said that he thought this was all caused by a, quote, blood feud between Chief Morales and Steve DeVogas, who was the chair of the Fire and Police Commission. And the consensus around Milwaukee seems to be that these directives weren't actually about what was going on or not going on in terms of policing in Milwaukee, but it was a way to get rid of Chief Morales.
And so what were these directives asking Morales to do, these 11 directives?
These 11 directives, which spanned 7 pages, were really voluminous and not particularly detailed. So they asked him to provide lots of documents, reports, video, things like that. And then one of the ones that you've mentioned earlier and that, you know, people have talked about before is potentially changing the policy on the use of tear gas and pepper spray on protesters. That one became problematic when we thought the Democratic National Convention was actually going to be a big in-person event because a lot of other police agencies pulled out saying they didn't feel like they could provide the adequate security without those tools. So that got moved off until September. What we don't know now is our reporters asked the commissioners yesterday as they left the meeting, will the new chief, Brunson, still have to comply with these directives? And no one would give us a straight answer.
These directives, the police department has said that they're unclear, that they had factual errors, that they're potentially illegal. What do you see in what is being asked here?
Well, I do think that a lot of the directives were not necessarily well thought out. So, for example, one of them had to do with an officer who shot a bystander, and the Fire and Police Commission was saying Chief Morales doesn't plan to discipline this officer, and they want a full accounting of what happened in that case. Well, it turns out Morales did in fact fire that officer, and he has now appealed to the Fire and Police Commission to get his job back. So that should be interesting. There are, I think, a lot of these directives talk about more transparency with the public in terms of these investigations, which, as you can imagine, I'm completely in favor of as a journalist. But the police department was taking issue in that the Fire and Police Commission wanted them to have a full and open discussion of open cases, whether those are open criminal cases or open disciplinary cases, which takes you into some potentially problematic territory.
You briefly mentioned here Morales failing to fire Michael Mattioli, who has been charged with first-degree reckless homicide after putting Joel Acevedo in a chokehold while off-duty in April. What about that case in particular is the commission seeing as a failure in Morales?
Right. And so now that case is not one where Morales has fired Mattioli. And that case was just a mess from the beginning. The district attorney charged Mattioli with homicide in that case. And then the police department started doing its internal investigation, which usually they wait until the criminal is completed before they start their own internal investigation, which would be what would lead to discipline or firing. We could have a whole other discussion about why I think they shouldn't wait until after the day is done, but that's irrelevant to this conversation. So anyway, what happened was the Fire and Police Commission ordered the police department to stop their internal investigation of Mattioli and said they were going to do it themselves. And I've been working here 18 years, and I do not remember anything like that ever happening before. And so now the commission has said, yes, they feel Mattioli needs to be disciplined, but they haven't fired him yet either. So he's kind of the one who got lucky in all this, in my opinion.
We're speaking with Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigative reporter Gina Barton about the decision by an oversight panel in Milwaukee to demote the city's police chief, Alfonso Morales. Do you think a different leader can bring peace to Milwaukee streets to rebuild trust with residents? How do you think the Milwaukee Police Department has handled protests after the killing of George Floyd? What changes would you want to see? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. You mentioned Morales's lawyer, Frank Kimball. They've said that they felt the commission was preparing to fire Morales. Why do you think the commission stopped short of firing?
That was a question that we were talking a lot about in our newsroom yesterday. And I think there are a couple of reasons. One is because Frank Gimbel said, you know, if they fire him, nothing is off the table. And I don't really think anyone wants a big employment lawsuit dealing with the police chief for many reasons. Another reason I think is just because Morales, when he got the chief's job, was in fact a highly respected captain. And so captain and chief are two different jobs. And so maybe they figured, hey, he's not the guy to lead the entire department. He doesn't have the experience, or he doesn't have the communication skills or whatever, but he's still a good captain and still a good cop.
Explain how he rose to the position in the first place.
Morales was named to finish the term as chief when Ed Flynn retired. And interestingly, Ed Flynn, Morales's predecessor, retired after the commission had given him a directive to change the city's pursuit policy. So Flynn retired, and then Morales was named kind of the interim chief to finish Flynn's term. And then in December, last fall, is when things got really crazy. So last fall, the Fire and Police Commission had said they were going to do a vote on Morales. And then suddenly Steve DeVogis, the chair at the time, said, no, there are things we need done. We're not going to do a vote. And then a source gave us at the Journal Sentinel a video of Steve DeVogis, who is an attorney, accompanying a prominent real estate developer to be interrogated by a detective regarding a possible sexual assault. So you've got the chair of the Fire and Police Commission appearing at, you know, a meeting with a detective about a criminal case, and he's technically the police chief's boss. So that was really problematic, and everybody was angry that the video got out. And then Steve DeVogis found himself under fire and was subject to an independent investigation ordered by the Fire and Police Commission, which he was the chair of, and they found that he had likely had some ethical lapses going on. So Mayor Barrett said that he believes that whole situation is what started this blood feud between the two of them. And so less than a year after they appointed him to a four-year term, Morales is out as chief.
Gina Barton is a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigative reporter. We're discussing the vote by the Oversight Board last night to demote the city's police chief, Alfonso Morales. Do you think a different leader can bring peace and trust to Milwaukee streets? How do you think the police department has handled protests over George Floyd? What do you think of the oversight of the police department? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking about the move by Milwaukee's Police and Fire Commission last night to demote Police Chief Alfonso Morales and the long simmering tensions in the city over policing. Do you think a change in leadership will make a difference? What do you think about the use of tear gas by police? Are you a Milwaukee police officer? What should we know about the job on the force? Join in 800-642-1234. Criminal justice reporter Gina Barton of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel stays with us. Gina, tensions between the police department, between residents and the commission, as we've been talking about, have gone back for years. Can you explain such things as the ACLU's settlement agreement with Stop and Frisk and how Sylville Smith's death in 2016, Dontre Hamilton 2014, how does this all fit in with the relationship with the police department and how it carries out its work?
That is a question that we could talk about all day. Obviously, the racial problems in Milwaukee go back decades. And many of those things seemed to come to a head under the tenure of Police Chief Ed Flynn, who was Morales' predecessor, where there were all kinds of things like the officer-involved shooting of Seville Smith that you mentioned. In that case, the officer was charged but acquitted. He is off the force now. There were illegal strip and cavity searches going on. And then there was the civil unrest in Sherman Park, where there were fires and looting and a lot of those issues. So the city of Milwaukee did not come to the George Floyd protest out of nowhere. You know, this was something that has been building and has been happening for a long time. The ACLU sued over stop and frisk and over pulling over black motorists without cause, you know, and trying to search them, that sort of thing, was filed again while Ed Flynn was chief. And when Morales came in, he quickly settled that suit and agreed to make some changes to policing policy. So he is also Latino. So people thought that maybe having a chief who was willing to listen to underrepresented communities in terms of policing would be a good thing. But it so far it hasn't happened. Now, Brunson, the new chief, is African-American. So a lot of people I know are encouraged by that and are hoping that having a black police chief again after probably 15 years is going to really help trust with the black community in Milwaukee.
Can you give us a sketch of what he is like? He's been with the Milwaukee Police Department 25 years, is that right?
Yes, he's been with the Milwaukee Police Department quite a long time. He is a very traditional, old school police officer, as far as I can tell.
What do you mean by that?
Having been, you know, policing has changed a whole lot in the past 20 to 30 years. So I just mean somebody who has come up through the ranks with those kind of old law and order ideas, he's had to kind of work to change those, as anybody of his generation would. And so he was promoted under Morales to assistant chief, and so now does have that kind of experience in terms of leadership and administration in the police department. We'll have to see how it goes. I don't necessarily know why anyone would want the job as Milwaukee police chief right now. And I wonder if anyone could work effectively in this system where there has been so much racial tension, so much tension between the commission and the police department. Also, the rank and file officers really supported Morales. So how are they going to feel about now having Brunson as chief? And the other thing is that yesterday the mayor was really angry. He was really concerned about trying to figure out who gave that interrogation video to the media. And so did not say he necessarily supported Morales until Morales got to the bottom of that. But Mayor Barrett also thinks that this demotion was not fair, that Morales wasn't given enough time to respond, that it wasn't done in a public enough and thoughtful enough manner. So you've got the police chief, common counsel, fire and police commission, mayor, everybody is sort of butting heads and at odds. And I mean, that would be a tough job for anybody.
We're talking with Milwaukee Journal Sentinel investigative reporter Gina Barton about the recent upheaval at the Milwaukee Police Department and the Oversight Board. Taking your questions about it as well at 800-642-1234. Gina, the Milwaukee Common Council has been considering a 10% cut to the police department's budget next year. Do we know anything about where the budget stands for policing?
I don't think we do. And that was one of the things that the Common Council members who were critical of Morales had mentioned, that they said they really wanted to engage with him about, you know, if we make these cuts, what would they look like? And I think that when you talk about, people say defund the police, but I think at least here in Milwaukee, nobody is saying, like, we want to get rid of the police department. We don't want policing in Milwaukee. What they're saying is we want to reallocate some of those resources to other areas. So I think it would be most helpful to say, okay, if you take 10% of the police budget, where are you going to put that money? And then say you're going to put it toward mental health and social workers. Well, are those people then going to respond when the police get a call about mental health? Because, you know, the argument that was made by Morales in an op-ed in our paper a few weeks ago is that you can't cut the police funding and still expect them to do everything they're doing now. So if you want to have a different response to some of the non-criminal things that police respond to, you have to set up an infrastructure that is going to work. Otherwise, you're just going to have slow response times and, you know, more of a mess than you have now.
I want to circle back to tear gas, pepper spray, rubber bullets, and the Black Lives Matter protests. Where does the Milwaukee Police Department stand on these tactics?
I think that almost every police department I am aware of and have studied want to have those sorts of tools available. If you really do get a crowd that is out of control and setting things on fire, I mean, that some people have said that that is one reason why the Sherman Park uprising in 2016 got so out of hand, is that Ed Flynn did not use those things, right? So as a result, you have a whole neighborhood basically being looted, set on fire. You know, it was really a really frightening time out there. So I think the key is, when do you actually use those things, right? So everybody agrees you don't use those things on peaceful protesters. But the argument is, what's peaceful and what's not, and who gets to decide? And I think a lot of times the police and the community disagree about what's peaceful.
And we're almost out of time. What happens next, Gina? What are you watching for?
That is the million-dollar question. We're watching to see how Brunson does as chief when he comes in. What is he going to do? I'm watching to see what's going to happen with DeVogas and his client, and whether that client gets charged with the sexual assault, whether DeVogas stays on the Fire and Police Commission, and whether Nelson Solaire, the new chair of the commission, actually does things differently and more productively.
Gina, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Gina Barton is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Just ahead, it is On Point. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.